Thank you, Gillian. Are we on? We're good. Yes, so we are looking in our series in John. If you are familiar with the last few weeks, we've been looking at the book of John and the seven signs that there are in John, the seven miracles, and what that says about who Jesus is and his character, and what we can learn from that, what it says about him. A couple of films that I've watched this year, one of which is Cast Away with Tom Hanks. Has anyone seen that one? Yes, where he is on an aeroplane over the Pacific Ocean, I think it is, and he crash lands and ends up marooned on this desert island. Another film I watched this year, don't know if there's a coincidence in this theme, was The Life of Pi. Has anyone seen that one as well? Another film where somebody gets shipwrecked, and both of those films have got these sequences. In the Castaway, the CGI was a bit more dodgy because it was 2000, I think. But these scenes where these characters get marooned in these huge storms with these waves going up to, I don't know, 50, 100 feet. And it's a terrifying thought. Tom Hanks in Castaway is just in this little dinghy holding on for dear life as these waves toss him up and around. And that's a scary thought, especially for me, because I'm not very good with water. I don't know if I've told you this story before, but when I was about eight, we went to, I think, Lake Windermere in the Lake District, and we decided to go out on a boat. And I got so seasick and so unhappy with the movement of the waves that we had to abandon the entire trip on the waves, me and my brother and my dad, because I was so seasick and I just did not like the movement of the water. And that was on a pretty steady, yep, Julian's sussing me out for ships here. Yes, so we're looking today at the walking on the water and just trying to put myself in the shoes of these disciples who are on this lake, the Sea of Galilee, which they would have known well, but they end up in a huge storm. So I'm going to read, and it's in, if you want to follow, it's in John 6. And I'm going to start actually in verse 14, because this follows hot on the heels of Jesus feeding the 5,000. And so after Jesus had fed the 5,000, after the people had seen the sign that Jesus performed, they began to say, "Surely this is the prophet who is to come into the world." Jesus, knowing that they intended to come and make him king by force, withdrew again to a mountain by himself. When evening came, his disciples went down to the lake, where they got into a boat and set off across the lake for Capernaum. By now it was dark and Jesus had not yet joined them. A strong wind was blowing and the waters grew rough. When they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, they saw Jesus approaching the boat, walking on the water, and they were frightened. But he said to them, "It is I, don't be afraid." Then they were willing to take him into the boat, and immediately the boat reached the shore where they were heading. The next day, the crowd that had stayed on the opposite shore of the lake realized that only one boat had been there and that Jesus had not entered it with his disciples, but that they had gone away alone. Then some boats from Tiberias landed near the place where the people had eaten the bread after the Lord had given thanks. Once the crowd realized that neither Jesus nor his disciples were there, they got into boats and went to Capernaum in search of Jesus. I think it's quite apt actually that we've been singing today about God as King and Jesus as King and his majesty, because the first point I want to bring us to is just Jesus is sovereign over creation. This is a little bit different from the other Gospels where this appears in Matthew and Mark, because we don't have for instance, Peter walking on the water in John's account. It's focused much more on Jesus on the way in which he interacts with his disciples, but this sign of what it shows us about him. And this is the second time that the disciples have ended up in a storm. If you remember, before they ended up in another storm, in a situation where their boat was going all over the place, and Jesus calmed the storm. And what they said then was, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obeys him." Even the wind and the waves obey him. And this is something that I think we need to think about in terms of the Old Testament context. Why they would have been so amazed about this miracle, apart from the fact that it's pretty incredible whichever way you look at it. Because I'll try doing a little bit of a Craig Brown if I can. Can anybody think of some examples from the Old Testament? I know there's only a few of us this morning, but some examples from the Old Testament where God's people faced chaotic, stormy seas. Might be a tough question this time on a Sunday morning, I don't know. So? In the life of Job. Jonah, yes. That was the one I was thinking of. Well done, Colin. Yes, absolutely. Jonah. Yes, and I think that's worth reading. That's an amazing story of one of God's people facing a storm. In that case, it was a storm caused by him running away from something that God wanted him to do. But Jonah ended up in this storm, and the amazing thing about that is that the people who were in the storm with him actually came and were changed and came to faith, actually, because of that experience. So Jonah is in this storm, the sea is getting rougher and rougher, and Jonah ends up going into the sea, and the raging sea grew calm. At this, the men greatly feared the Lord, and they offered sacrifice to the Lord and made vows to him. So this is one of the examples of God's people, or somebody who was a prophet of God, being involved in a situation of a great storm. Another one you might think of is the book of Exodus, when God's people came through the Red Sea and were brought through and delivered. You might also think of Elijah, who was somebody who prayed and no rain came on the land for 3.5 years. And then he prayed again and rain came. So these are the sorts of things which these people would have known about. They would have known these stories back to front. And so when Jesus demonstrates authority over the chaos of the sea and the storm, he's doing something remarkable, something that they wouldn't have expected from anybody other than God, working in a really powerful way. And when God brought Israel out of Egypt, he took them through the Red Sea. Jesus walks over the Sea of Galilee. I just think that's amazing that he has this complete control over even this chaotic storm, that he can just walk over the top of it. So Jesus in this story is a Jesus who is sovereign over the forces of creation. He's sovereign over the storm. Who is this that even the wind and the waves obey him? And it doesn't mean that the storm gets any less stormy. It doesn't mean that it becomes a pleasant thing to experience, but it is it's a case of who he is. He is the God who created the sea and the chaos and everything that goes with it. He is the one who created it. He is sovereign over it. But he's also sovereign over our fears. He's sovereign over creation, but he's also sovereign over our fears. And when I was reading this story, the one phrase stuck out to me. I don't know if it's just the way in which my mind works. When they heard that it was Jesus, then they were willing to take him into the boat. In the other Gospels, it says that they thought he was a ghost, which is something that they often do when Jesus is doing something supernatural and they don't quite understand. They go, oh, must be a ghost, and they start panicking. But they weren't willing to take Jesus into the boat, which in my mind, I've got this image of them fending him away with an oar or something, trying to keep him at arm's distance, trying to maybe row desperately away from him, because they didn't know who he was. They didn't know what he was doing. And it's those six words, it is I, don't be afraid. And that's an amazing thing, actually, that the Jesus who was sovereign over the mighty storm was also sovereign over their fears. And he's saying, trust me. Like I say, it doesn't make the storm any less scary, doesn't make it any more rough, doesn't make the experience of being in that storm any easier. But it is less scary when you let Jesus into the boat. When you let Jesus into the boat, it is less scary. And that phrase, don't be afraid, you may be aware, it's, people have gone through and added up, it's the most frequent command of God in the scriptures. Do not be afraid. And our response is to panic. I know my response frequently is to panic. But I believe that God has given us the ability to speak over fear and to bring fear to him and to allow him to speak over us his peace. Some of you will have heard this story already. When I was doing my driving test, took me quite a number of goes. Francis remembers well. I ended up failing my first couple of tests, and then I had one which was put off because of ill health, and then another one where the examiner wasn't around, and by the time I got round to test number five, I was pretty nervous, and I just got loads of people to pray. I thought, right, okay, maybe just need to get loads of people to pray. And I remember I was in a position where I had to do a parallel park, and I went in at a dodgy angle, and so I had to come out and try and do it again. And at which point, I had a bus coming the other way, who was also on a test with his learning plates. I had a queue of traffic coming from behind me. All of this stuff coming together, and for whatever reason, I just had this immense peace in my heart. Did the parallel park, pulled it off, traffic, and it was cleared, and I managed to pass my test. And I remember looking back just thinking, there is no way that I would have pulled off that maneuver if it wasn't for God being with me, giving me his peace. And I think it's something that I just, I frequently forget. I'll ask God for that peace. I'll ask God for that reassurance, and then a lot of the time, the next time I'm in a situation, I'll panic and I'll forget that. But Jesus is sovereign over our fears. Do not be afraid, it is I. So he's sovereign over creation, he's sovereign over our fear. But I think there's something else here which is a bit of a big picture for this passage, because it comes in a big flow where, like I say, Jesus has fed the 5,000, he's walked on the water. There's a little bit that comes after which I want us to look at, because it shows that Jesus is the humble king. Jesus is the humble king. Because at the start of this, Jesus is fending off the crowds who want to make him their king by force, it says. And if we go on a little bit longer, Jesus goes to the synagogue, and the people are looking for him because they want a follow-up miracle. He's fed them. He's done this amazing miracle, feeding the 5,000, and they want to find him so that they can get another piece of the action. And Jesus has this really long discussion with him, which I'm not going to take you through, but he basically disappoints them. They can't get their head around this. This is the Jesus we know, is his mum and his dad and his brothers. How can you be saying that you're from God? And then he also says, I am the bread of life, and you have to eat my flesh to be part of me, which is pretty, we're maybe used to that if you're used to receiving communion, but especially for a Jew, that is a very confusing thing to get your head around. So they basically freak out, and a lot of his disciples abandon him. So in verse 60, on hearing his teaching, many of his disciples said, this is hard teaching. Who can accept it? And then it says in verse 66, from this time, many of his disciples turned back and no longer followed him. You don't want to leave too, do you? Jesus asked the 12. What an amazing thing. In the space of 24 hours, Jesus has gone from a crowd of people, a mob, almost trying to forcibly make him their king, to turning to the 12 disciples and saying, are you guys leaving as well? Am I basically back to doing this from scratch? I think it's a real point for us when sometimes we're so focused on numbers and how many people have we got, how many people can we bring, and there's a good desire there if we want to share the good news with our city. But Jesus experienced a lot of rejection. Jesus experienced a lot of people leaving him. Jesus experienced a roller coaster of responses. And through all of it, he was humble. When the people tried to make him their king, his response was to run away to the mountainside, to be alone with the Father, to find that time by himself. And one of his most amazing miracles, walking on water, was witnessed by a handful of his disciples. This was not a big party trick that Jesus pulled off in order to impress them, in order to be like, look what I can do. This was for a very small group of his most close followers. If I was in Jesus' position and I'd fed the 5,000 and I'd walked on water, I'd have been doing a victory parade. I'd have been doing a special promotional tour. If Jesus had a PR team with him, they would have been doing, you know, we've got Emma involved. Yeah. Get the social media. You know, what can we do? We need to get them in the papers. We need to get everything that we can to capitalize on this moment. And when Jesus said these controversial things that drove people away, I can just imagine, what are you saying, Jesus? Why are you saying these things, driving these people away? And yet Jesus was not concerned with just getting a big crowd. And when they tried to put earthly power on him that wasn't right, he rejected it. And when he demonstrated his glory through walking on the water, it was to a few. So I just want to challenge you, are there any storms that you're facing? Do you need to recognize Jesus in the midst of that storm? Do you need to let him into the boat? Do you know that he is both the king who created the chaos and the fury of the storm, but also the one who walks on the water? The one who's worthy of all of the worship that we've given him today as king, and yet who embraced humility. Jesus is pretty unconventional. He's so often just confounds our expectations of the way in which we would do things. if we recognize that he is in charge, then trusting him, letting him into the boat, it follows. One follows the other. Okay. I'm going to hand back to Julian at this point.